All right.
In 3, 2, 1, let's go. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Daft on Draft podcast. And Corey and I have what'll probably be a little bit quicker of a podcast. But then again, it might not, because we could talk about the top prospects in the 2025 NFL draft class. It's 2024 now. I've had a long week. It is the 2025 NFL draft, and it is a bit of a weird year, in my opinion at least, where we have what I believe to be five or six legitimately blue chip talents, and then like 2 or 3 to maybe 5 legitimate first round talents, and then it kind of dives off from there. Mm-hmm. Other people are going to have more. Other people are going to have even less than that as well. These are just the way that I see it personally. And we are going to talk about our top 5 prospects today. I'm going to talk about my top 5. Corey will talk about his. And we will also be having ranking, a composite ranking between the two of us, an average of our 2 rankings for the Daft on Draft big board for the podcast. But I can't do that alone. Corey, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I am good. You know, again, I wish this was my day job, so I wasn't as exhausted by the time I got around to doing my football stuff. But for the time being, for the foreseeable future, I shouldn't say this is like around the corner. But for the time being, this is how it's going to be. But this is how it's been for the past 5 years, and I'm kind of used to it at this point. So, but I'm here, happy to be talking football. And I'm glad you brought up the draft, because for those who have listened to us, we continuously just talk about, like, in this class, this could happen. In this class, this could happen, as if it's a bad class. And overall, yeah, I do think it is. But specifically for today's podcast, I am excited to talk about it, because you said 4 or 5. I would say probably 3 or 4 guys that I will have blue chips on by the time athletic testing happens. So the top of the board is very top heavy. And then I think after 5, I dip into like low first round grades after the top 5. But still a couple first round grades back there. And then we're into second round grades pretty quick after that. How I have it set up right now, that I don't really see athletic testing elevating any of those guys into first round grades either. So it does fall off. But again, for the purposes of today, there are almost a handful of blue chip talents in this class. And I'm excited that we get to talk about those guys today, not as if we haven't talked about them already ad nauseum on this podcast, but we'll get to break them down a little bit more today and why.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we've already done an entire podcast. Might have been our first podcast that we just talked about Travis Hunter for an entire episode.
Yep.
We could do that again. We are not going to. Also, for the sake of this, I have Travis Hunter down twice. I don't know if we want to do that for this podcast, or if we want to talk about him as a receiver and a corner right now, if we want to separate it out. This is not something that we discussed, and it's not something that we discussed because, quite honestly, it's not something that you would normally think about, because guys don't play both ways. So, Corey, do you want to break him up into 2 separate people, or do you just want to make him his own person playing offense and defense?
I say we just make him his own person.
Okay.
Because it's not going to change our rankings one way or the other here.
Well, it technically does for me, because I have split him up between the two.
Well, that's true. You just talked to him about a second time later down the road. Yeah. I think when we get what you say, I'm gonna pause right here. This is where I would slot Travis Hunter as an offensive player.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good way to do it. I think that's the way that we'll do it. So we're going to talk about Travis Hunter as both guys, but then we will also talk about, when the time comes, where he would have graded as purely a wide receiver, which is the lower ranking that he gets. But he is our top ranked player, both of our top ranked players. Mm-hmm. I think that if you talked to 100 people, 100 draftniks that do this, I would assume 94 to 97 of us would have Travis Hunter as the top player in this class. It's just almost inarguable because of the outrageous, unprecedented versatility that he brings you as quite possibly the most intelligent zone coverage defender I've ever evaluated. The best ball skills for a defensive player I've ever evaluated by an insane margin. Nobody has even come close defensively to having those hands. Now, granted, guys defensively don't often get to show their hands because they don't play offense as well, but we've seen the way that he attacks the ball as a wide receiver. I think that he's got the most insane hands as any wide receiver in this class, and quite possibly over the past couple of classes. So you're talking about a guy with unbelievable zone eyes, unbelievable instincts, understands the intricacies of being a wide receiver as a zone coverage defender. And is he perfect in man? No, he's not. But he's also running at 60%, 50% of what a normal guy would be running because his battery is always low because he plays 150 snaps a game. So just being able to not be a liability defensively at the most reactionary position, quite possibly in sports, is insane in and of itself. And to be the best player, or arguably the best player at that position as a corner, strictly, is unprecedented territory for us. So he is my number one guy. It was closer in the numbers on my grading scale than it is in my heart. But he might be the best prospect I've ever watched. I mean, he's just that special.
He is. He is. Again, the one hole you could poke into his game is that some more physical wide receivers have beaten him at the catch point. Mm-hmm. That's it. Elika Yimenor a year ago, Tet McMillan a year ago, Tet McMillan. I mean, he was pretty limited this year when they played Arizona, but yeah. McMillan last year got him a little bit. But that's really it. That's really the only hole that you could poke in his game right now. Yeah, man, I think you hit on it a lot, and we should probably alternate talking about these guys so one of us isn't exhausting ourselves. Yes. The second one's like, yeah, I agree. But yeah, man, I agree. Very hard to poke a hole in this game. And I when's the next time we'll see a player like this? Like, when is the next time we'll see? Will we ever see a player like this? Like, it's bizarre, especially like going back to he was the top recruit in the nation, and he decided to go to Jackson State. Like, he's been him. Mm-hmm. Except we haven't seen him on a national level until last year because, I mean, the kid could have gone to Florida State. He could have gone to Miami. He was heavily recruited by everyone, and he chose to go to Jackson State and now Colorado, which is just a unique pathway. But he's proven time and time again that he's the best player in the country, and he does stuff every week. You're like, yep, there he is again. Yep, there he is again. Doesn't matter what side of the ball. He's doing things that are like, yep, there it is again. My number two guy. Do you want to do my number two, then composite, or do we both have the same two? Or what?
Yeah, we have the same. We have the same top two.
So same number two here. I was shocked at how close this was to Travis Hunter as well, because to be honest, this was an easier eval to write because I just think pass rushers are more aesthetically pleasing to watch than corners, in my opinion. I just can blow through pass rushers because it's like, oh yeah, this guy's got it. Abdul Carter, man, is my overall number two. Penn State pass rusher Abdul Carter. I watched the USC game. I watched the Ohio State game today. I'm excited to coming up. He's got a matchup with Ariante Ursary, and then they're poised to make the playoffs as well. So he'll get a pretty decent playoff opponent too. I'm excited for those games because outside of that, you have Wyatt Millen week one, but like his season kind of ramped up slow. So I don't really hold a lot of credit to like the week one matchup. I probably will for Millen more than Carter. That makes sense. But those early season games, I tend to give a little bit of leeway for just because, you know, it's early season, whatever. But man, the Ohio State game, and again, Donovan Jackson was playing out of position, but it wasn't so much how, like, he was beating Donovan Jackson, but some of the ways that he was beating Donovan Jackson really impressed me. And what I mean by that is there were some reps where Jackson, a guard playing left tackle in that game, was frame to frame with him and did get locked into his breastplate and did get hands inside where Donovan Jackson wants to be and where he wins. And Carter was unbelievably violent with his hands and replacing hands and getting his frame clean and some areas like that, that really blew me away of just how, like, the guy just sees red all the time. Like it's like he blinks and that he's got that bull rage in his eyes by the time it's ready to go. Despite kind of a smaller frame, despite not a lot of length, I was really impressed at how well he was able to leverage out as an edge center, how well he was able to stack and shed as a run defender. to be a solid run defender as well. That really like stood out to me and kind of surprised me, to be honest. And then you talk a lot about a proactive and reactive athlete. Obviously he's a dynamic proactive athlete. There were some reps where I saw him off ball reacting where that dude, his burst and his acceleration is 0 to 100. Like he sees something and he's full speed. Like that's it. His closing speed is unbelievable. Again, he's a Penn State athlete, but we see a lot of really great Penn State athletes. And this guy might be up there with Micah Parsons, Odafe Owe as like the best Penn State athletes we've ever seen. That's just the kind of athlete that he is. And then we can talk about his pass rush plan, his nuance. I was blown away. He was winning with cross chops. He was winning with club rips. He was jab stepping outside, forcing oversets, and then crossing face or spinning back inside and winning along the inside track. That doesn't even take away from his bend. And I think he's got some extremely flexible ankles. I saw him turning some of like he could turn a circle into a square with how tight he's turning some of these corners. Like it's unbelievable the way like he's working ankle to ankle with the guy across from him is just how tight he's turning these corners. So there isn't a way that he can't win, not a way that he can't win, let alone that they're standing him up in the A gap. They're standing him up in the B gap. They're moving him all around. They're letting him come off the edge. They're doing all sorts of fun stuff with him. There isn't a way that Abdul Carter hasn't been winning over the past, since they've entered conference play. He has been perhaps the most dominant player in college football since conference play has started. It's hard for me to poke a hole in this game right now. Like I can't tell you he doesn't do this well enough because I think I graded him out and I graded him out with three blue chip traits: pass rush plan, lower half flexibility, and explosiveness. All graded out as blue chip traits for me when I was grading him out, which is just phenomenal. That's phenomenal.
And I very rarely use like all caps when I'm writing up like positives and negatives in person's game, but my first one was endless reserves of explosive violence. Flat out, that's what he is. He is Micah Parsons, and I don't even want to call him Micah Parsons light because I think that that would be disrespectful to Abdul Carter as a prospect. Because when you look at them, Micah was an off-ball linebacker that rushed the passer every once in a while for Penn State. Penn State finally did the right thing with the guy and moved him to be a full-time edge, that is Abdul Carter this year. But he's also a guy with that linebacker experience, and you see that linebacker experience this year when they drop him into coverage and he peaks to number two or number one coming across the field and is able to match that guy in zone coverage. It's just outrageous reactive athleticism from a guy who is 250 pounds. He can do literally whatever you want to as a defensive player. And that's something, again, that Micah Parsons gives you. And there should be no surprise when you watch them and you get the similarities, because he's worked with Micah. He talks with Micah. Micah has talked about this on his podcast and the relationship that he has with Abdul Carter. So it's not surprising. He is a blur on the field. There is nothing, like you said, that he cannot do. And I think even his best game, you talked about the Ohio State game, I thought that the Washington game was absolutely unreal as well. So we're talking about a guy, legitimate blue chip traits up and down. And I think the one thing that people will probably knock him for is run defense. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of talk, you know, at least in like the Cowboys circles, like, well, you know, do you really want him and Michael on the field at the same time? Yes, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't turn this down, and you are also just discounting his rushing ability or his run defense ability because he's 250 pounds. You've obviously not watched him down in and down out. Now, is he going to be the same as, you know, I'm trying to think of a really good run defender that we've seen on the edge over the past couple of years. Like he's not going to be.
Jermaine Johnson was a good one.
Yes. Because he doesn't have 34 and a half inch arms and he doesn't weigh 265, 270 pounds. But with the violence that he plays with the reactive athleticism that he has, he can chase anything down. And he's not getting blown off of the ball on the edge either. He comes down, he wrong shoulders pulling blockers. He absolutely blows them up when they are coming across the formation. This is a dude who wants and craves the violence. He is a top-fledged player, one of my favorite evaluations over the past couple of years. He is, and it's not just that he's amazing. It's that this is his first year as a full-time edge. And as you said, he just keeps getting freaking better every single week. And so that is my number two player. That's your number two player. Our number three, four, and five player is Mason Graham. Got a 3.5 average for us. We will go through our individual rankings here soon. 4.5 is Will Johnson, and 4 is Ashton Jeanty. So our top player is Travis Hunter. Number 2 is Abdul Carter. Number 3 is Mason Graham. Number 4 is Ashton Jeanty. And number 4.5, or 5 in this case, would be Will Johnson. So that's how it stacks out for us on the composite board. For me, my third player is Mason Graham. And it's interesting because Mason was somebody who, coming into the season and even early in the year, that Texas game specifically, thought he was on the ground a lot. Didn't think that he had the most well-rounded or the most balanced game against Texas. But outside of that tape, I watched Texas. I watched Washington from last year. I watched the national championship game as well. I watched Minnesota this year, and then I watched Washington again this year. And we are talking about a guy who, you see what Braden Fisk is doing in Los Angeles right now, as somebody who I put down as a negative on Graham's report in the over the summer. Plays a bit like a bull in a china shop. Man, that physicality, that violence, even if you are a little bit out of control, you are going to be a difference maker in the backfield. When you play at his size, with his athleticism, with the violence that he plays with the technical prowess that he plays with on the interior, his ability to dissect hands, his ability to run through guys, his ability to bend the freaking edge at 320 pounds. And will he be a consistent presence on the edge as a looper? No, but he has that threat in him. And that makes his versatility absolutely asinine. He can play everywhere from the 0 to the 7 and not have an issue. You want to put him on the outside on base downs, you can do that. You want to put a 240-pound guy over the guard and put him over the tackle and let him run through the dude's chest, he can do that. There is very little that Mason Graham cannot do in his game. I mean, just has a bit of everything to the pass rush. Cross chop, rip and dip, spin, long arm, euro step, push, pull, swim. These are all things that I've seen on tape consistently that I wrote down, because I don't write things down if I only see it once. This is a defensive tackle with a full pass rush repertoire who is fan-freaking-tastic, stout against the run, not just as a physical presence, but somebody who is keying reads quickly, not getting reached on vertical or on horizontal concepts. This is a full-time 3-down, 1-tech, to 7-tech. This dude can ball. He is the third blue chip prospect in this draft class.
So Mason Graham for me was fourth on my board. He is one of those players that sits one on my numerical scale about 1.4 off of a blue chip grade. So he could certainly get there if he tests. Again, these big name guys, it's always a big question mark if they're going to go the combine and test. They might not, which is a larger conversation for the combine, but whatever. He's fourth on my board, but I will say, I don't know if I've ever seen, and I've been doing this since 2019, so the Jeffrey Simmons class, the Quinnen Williams class. Quinnen is probably the closest to, and I don't know even if Quinnen had the ankle flexibility that Mason Graham has. Mason Graham might have the most flexible ankles that I've ever seen on a defensive tackle. again, as you said, to run the loop around the outside. But not only that, when he is playing three tech, when he is playing five tech, to attack the outside shoulder of guards, of tackles, and still be able to turn the corner is huge. And I'm really glad you brought up his versatility, because no, is he gonna run, play, you know, seven tech often at the NFL? Like, he's played 29 snaps this year. Is that gonna happen? No. But you mentioned being a base down big end, and he has played 78 snaps at five tech this year, and including over 15 in two games this year. And I certainly think that's something that he can do at the NFL level. Again, violent hands, nuanced hands. Mason Graham is a very good fallback for a team that doesn't want to reach on one of these quarterbacks. A very good fallback for one of these teams that doesn't want to reach on the quarterbacks at the top of the board. He's dynamite, man. He's dynamite.
Yeah. So why don't you talk about your third ranked prospect
now? So for me, my third ranked prospect, and again, we're talking about a big board. This isn't a mock draft. I'm not saying this guy's going third overall. I don't take positional value into my big board, into my player rankings. I'm straight up ranking them based on the number that gets spit out when I grade them. For me, number three is running back Ashton Jeanty of Boise State. I think the only hesitation that I would have with Jeanty's game, and it's not that he's not a good receiver, because he's got really soft hands and does have a pretty good profile as a receiver, but it's that they aren't manufacturing touches for him in the passing game, or he's not a guy that, like, you do split out or you do try to manufacture. Like, that's the only thing. He's a dynamite pass protector, soft hands, in terms of running the football, extremely decisive, A-plus contact balance. Foot quickness, yeah, that's an S-tier. That's an S-tier blue chip trait as well. So with Jeanty, pretty similarly to what I was talking about with Abdul Carter, his vision, his contact balance, and his lower half tools, all graded up blue chip for me. This guy's phenomenal. We could talk about this, because you've kind of hinted at it, that you think he's up there with Saquon. So that means you would consider him above, like, Bijan Robinson coming out and guys like that. Okay.
I think that he is more complete than Bijan, and a lot of it has to do with the vision. It's just, it's different the way he sees the field.
Yeah. What is different is that Bijan was one of those running backs that you have to manufacture touches for. You have to try to get this guy in space. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen that on Jeanty's tape, but then again, he's playing at Boise State, where he is the offense. So it's like, it's easier just to turn around and hand him the football. That's the way you manufacture touches for him, is just give him the freaking ball. So Ashton Jeanty, by the time he tests, will also be a blue chip player. On tape, he is 0.021 for blue chip grade for me, on tape, which, and again, most of that is because of his body of work as a receiver, of just, other than catching checkdowns and swings, that's pretty much all he's asked to do as a receiver in that offense. But again, as a pass protector, my God, dude, he'll step up and he'll look to declean anybody who's coming at him. So Ashton Jeanty is my number three player on my big board.
Yeah. So I think when we get into the discussion about him as a wide receiver, honestly, to me, it feels a little bit like with Elik Ayumanor at Stanford. It's about getting him the football. And last year, he led college football in receiving for running backs. He had like 560 yards or something like that. And he played, I believe, like 50 or 60 snaps in the slot. Let me see exactly how many it was. It was 30. He played 30 snaps in the slot. He played 17 snaps out wide as well, on passing snaps last year. So he did a little bit more of that last year. And he just touched the ball as a receiver more in 2023. And so you kind of got to go back to that to see a little bit more of that. But overall, there's just nothing that he's not great at. And that's kind of the difference between him and Saquon. Like, Saquon obviously a freakier athlete. We're talking about a one of one dude.
Yeah.
We saw him reverse hurdle somebody the other week. It just nobody else in the world is doing that. Bijan had it all when it came to the ability to make guys miss and the smooth, fluid athleticism that he had, and his pass catching ability was outrageous. But the pass protection wasn't near what JT brings you. JT is everything. He's great in pass pro. He's got soft hands. His vision is outrageous. He's got enough long. It's not Saquon long speed, but he's got enough long speed to run by guys. He's got the acceleration through the second level to make in those splash plays happen. And then on top of all of that, he's 5'8", 220 pounds, and he's got that Marshawn Lynch in him as well, where he can have a play, two plays, three plays a game, where he's breaking two, three, four, five tackles on a single play, just stringing together broken tackles and missed tackles forced on the same play. This is the guy who can string those things together. And so even if your environment isn't necessarily the best, the biggest difference between somebody like him and somebody like Saquon is Saquon trying to do a lot behind the line of scrimmage, get east-west, whereas JT is going to find any sliver of hope on a particular rep and get north-south and be able to break an arm tackle or be able to make a guy miss in the hole or be able to manipulate a second-level defender, be patient at the line of scrimmage, and then find a cutback lane. He can do it all as a runner. He ended up being my fifth-ranked player. The difference between me and Corey, I think, here is that I do put positional value in my grading scale. There is a multiplier. And for running backs, it's just lower because it's not a valued position in the NFL draft. If it weren't for that, he would have been very much closer to that 3 and 4 range where Mason Graham and the next guy we're going to talk about, Will Johnson, are.
Yeah, I completely get it. Again, I think positional values, maybe that's a conversation for another episode as well, because I just feel like the NFL is developing in a way where as long as you can figure out a way to get somebody involved, I don't care what position they play. And that, not, like, outside of non-quarterback, like outside of quarterback, I'm not sure there is much. Without doing deep dives of analytics about how much you could pay for free agency versus using high draft, like I don't
want to, you know, like that's where the value comes in. The value comes in is with if you draft a running back in the top five, you are already paying at the top of the pay scale at the position. Whereas if it's quarterback and you hit on a quarterback, or if it's wide receiver and you hit on a wide receiver or an edge rusher, that's an insane value over the next 4 or 5 years that you're not getting at running back. So it's a cost issue there.
It kind of is, but then at the same point, like you could look at Brock Bowers and say Brock Bowers entered the NFL as a top five paid tight end, and he's probably the best tight end in the NFL this year. Like, so, you know, as I feel like, and that's rare. Brock Bowers is rare, but some of these running backs are rare too. And I think back to like the Detroit Lions taking Jack Campbell and Jahmyr Gibbs. And I think, and again, using hindsight analysis isn't my favorite thing to do, but like they clearly had a plan of how to use Jahmyr Gibbs. And that's more valuable to them than taking Lucas Van Ness or taking Nolan Smith. Because they play more premium positions or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So like, that's where it kind of breaks down for me. It's like, as long as you know how that you have a vision for this guy and this guy can be a playmaker for your football team, just take the good football player, I think is kind of what I'm trending toward.
And that's how good Ashton JT is.
Yeah.
Even with me putting a multiplier, which brings his grade down, he is still my fifth ranked player and a blue chip player on my board. Like, that's how good he is as a player. So, the next guy that we're going to talk about, you want to start off with him because he hasn't played a ton of football this year.
And he probably won't play. I would be shocked if he played another snap too.
And we don't care.
No, we don't care. Michigan cornerback Will Johnson. Will Johnson entered the season as, I want to say, consensus top player in the draft class. Every major draft analyst, well, some had like Nate Tice had Mykael Williams. I know that. But Dane Brugler had Will Johnson as his top prospect. We had Will Johnson as our top prospects entering the season. And outside of playing banged up, I don't think there's anything that he did this year that swayed us. In fact, I think I saw more ball skills on this year's tape than I have in past years. I will say the one thing is I felt like he just didn't give a crap as a run defender this year. Like, I saw a pretty significant decline in his run defense and effort in run defense this year, which is kind of disappointing. But at the end of the day, we're talking about a cornerback who at 6'2 and probably 200 pounds is twitched up, dude. Like, this guy can flip his hips at ease. This guy's got an explosive trigger to get downhill. Again, the length is there. His man and press technique is unbelievably good. Again, it's hard to poke a hole in his game. And he's got a knack for just getting his hands on the football. That's another thing, too, is his instincts are off the charts where he's just sitting and baiting on like two pick sixes he had this year. He was just sitting and baiting. And jumped on the football. So instincts are off the charts. Again, I wish I would have saw. And again, it could have been because he was playing hurt that he wasn't as active in his run defense. But there were times it just felt like he was completely checked out of trying to engage as a run defender on some of the tape that I watched this year. But ball skills, tip top press technique, tip top man coverage ability. Really subtle with his hands as well to get away with some pass interference-ish things, being a little grabby, but like he gets it. He gets it. He's going to be a day one starter and a day one impact player for whatever team drafts him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing that really stood out for me with him is just understanding where you are along the stem and what's coming based on the release, based on what depth you are at the time. He runs a lot of routes for guys. And that's what you want to see from a guy in man coverage. Obviously, you want to see the reactionary athleticism to be able to stick with guys as well. He has that in spades. But it's that next level. You can call it intuition, but it's really just an understanding of, at this depth, these are the routes that I have to worry about breaking off. And you're able to process all of that. And you're able to see cues that, you know, maybe he saw on tape. Maybe he just innately knows that, hey, if a guy's hips are doing this, if a guy is leaning a certain way, this is the route that I'm going to get. If he's leaning into me, it's probably going to be a comeback or it's going to be a deep out. You know, if he slows down a little bit, he's probably going to be trying to bait me into lulling me to sleep, and then I'm going to be able to carry him downfield still. Gearing down, what is he going to do when he's gearing down? And so he's just innately there with guys and mirroring them down the field. And then to do that at 6'2", over 200 pounds or right around 200 pounds, he's got great length. And I'm glad that you brought up the ball skills, because the ball skills with him are real. And if it weren't for Travis Hunter literally being one of the best wide receivers in the draft class, we would be talking about Will Johnson and his ball skills being very much among the best that we have seen from a corner in a very long time. Because this is a dude who, in press, in zone as well, but it's anybody, well, I say anybody, there are corners who will just legitimately like drop that pass when they jump it. But his ability to climb the ladder and finish interceptions like a wide receiver is really, really impressive as well. And so this is a dude who has every single trait, like you said, to be a day one impact starter at the NFL level.
Yeah. There we go. As we build our big board, that is our first five. So again, we've only got a few weeks of college football to talk about left. So we'll be getting through this pretty fast once we're not talking about post-game, pre-game analysis anymore. We can talk straight prospects. We can get into positional rankings as well. Some really fun stuff in the lab right now for both of us. But just reviewing, our composite big board was number one, Travis Hunter. Number two, Abdul Carter. Number three, Mason Graham. Number four, Ashton Jante. Number five, Will Johnson.
Yep.
My personal one had Jante and Graham flipped. So I had Hunter, Carter, Jante, Graham, Johnson. Well, you aligned with the consensus board as well.
Oh, am I with the consensus board?
Yeah.
That is very interesting. Yes, Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, Mason Graham, Will Johnson, and Ashton JT.
Oh, no. Then no, it's no, we're not. Because I said the consensus was JT at four. Is that right or not? It is, right?
And then Will Johnson, right? I haven't looked at the consensus board, okay. So I wouldn't even know. But that's interesting. If I would have been aligned with the consensus board and not even having looked at it. But I can pretty much guarantee I will not be aligning with the consensus board with numbers 6, 7, mm-hmm. 8, or 9.
So I think 6 and 7 we might agree on, which is really bizarre.
We will.
Really, because I think they're two players that consensus, like mainstream, like a lot of the other analysts out there, don't have as high as we do, but we've talked a lot about these two guys. So I think we might have 6 and 7 aligned. I really
We might have 6 aligned. But I don't think we'll have 7 aligned.
Okay.
So, okay. Based off of our previous conversations about the player. But anyways, that's all we have for you guys today. We will be back tomorrow with a preview of the college football weekend. We hope that you guys enjoyed that. We hope that you guys enjoyed this. And we hope that you guys have a fantastic day, night, morning, whatever time it is when you are watching or listening to this. He is Corey Kinnon. I am Dalton Miller. And remember, guys, I love you. Goodbye.
Awesome.